about 15 companies that were called, and we had about 25 possible flags that could be obtained on each one of those companies. And out of the 15 companies, 14 of them had answered almost any flag that they were asked. The only reason the one company did not is we did not get a live person at that company that we can actually talk to.
Right.
There was about 135 phone calls made, and out of the 135 phone calls to those 15 companies, there was only about 11 people who put up some form of resistance.
Jim, walk us through what social engineering is. We've talked about it a lot, but some people are still not completely familiar with the term.
Well, we have a kind of a different definition than what everyone else seems to be using. We like to be a little bit more expansive with it. We call social engineering the act of trying to get someone to take an action, and that action may or may not be in their best interest. We feel that that's the most accurate definition for social engineering, simply because in many different aspects of our lives, we'll use social engineering tactics. That might be doctors trying to get a patient to do something that they should be doing, psychiatrists, say law enforcement when they're conducting an interview. And then at the same time, we'll have malicious implementations of social engineering, such as someone trying to steal a password, trying to gain some sort of other credentials or some sort of monetary gain.
So when we're talking about social engineering, that's not necessarily a bad thing if you're encouraging people to do the right thing. As you said, doctors will encourage people to take their medicines or something like that.
That's correct.
And, what we're talking about and what your Capture the Flag contest was about was essentially looking at the social security, my goodness, the cybersecurity implications of this, and particularly in connection with, this is one of the ways if somebody wants to hack a network, it's fairly inexpensive.
Yes, that's the... Well, the great thing from an attacker standpoint, yeah, about social engineering is anytime you have any sort of action, you want to get a return on your investment, a return on your time. And social engineering is a great implementation of an attack against an organization simply because it is so effective. It keeps the cost down low, and you can get a good return on it from a malicious perspective.
So, Matty, as you were doing this competition, as you were pulling together this report, what lessons did you learn? Did you take away from this?
Well, as our business also involves penetration testing, we've always known that social engineering is an easy vector, which usually bypasses all the technical aspects of security. But I think one of the things that really blew our minds was the amazing success rate, if you like, again, success rate from the side of the attacker. On how easy it was to, in fact, get pretty much all the companies to click a link, which is probably one of the most dangerous aspects of social engineering, because that could usually lead to a compromise. And to add to that, what also blew our mind was the types and versions of outdated software that most of these organizations were using.
Yeah.
So, for example, we found that many organizations were using outdated versions of Internet Explorer or outdated versions of Adobe of its various types. And adding those two aspects together basically meant that if this were a malicious attack, then most of these organizations would have been compromised. And I think, again, we knew this in the past because we see this day by day, but we didn't imagine that corporate America, especially such large companies, would be vulnerable to this. You'd just expect better security measures, especially with such large companies.
Chris, so often when we're talking about these kinds of issues, we talk about training and how important training is. And of course, we know that the first thing that gets cut when budgets get tight is, of course, training. But I'm going to read just a portion from your report. When employees do not have clear guidelines set in place in response to a given situation, they will default to actions that they perceive as being helpful. By and large, this is tapping into the good nature. Bad guys tapping into the good nature of people.
Yes, yeah, you know, and what proves that the need for training even more so is one of the statistics that we gathered in the report was the the way that even non-experienced social engineers were able to gather so much intel. We had people that literally came to us and said this was the first time ever that they were making a phone call of this nature. They were not in the security field as a social engineer auditor. They had not done any kind of work like this before in the past. They were very nervous about it. So almost you would expect that when they make this call that the failure might be the inevitable outcome for this phone call. But yet they were very successful. And again, from like Maddie said, from the attacker standpoint. And it just showed that that security awareness training is much needed in this country.
And it's interesting because we had some folks on about this study that showed people were generally, non-techie people were generally scared, I think in part because of this. They don't know what to do. So when this person calls and says, hey, I'm with our IT shop, please go to this website, they're more likely to do that because they're scared that if they don't, oh my goodness, I'm going to break the entire network for the entire company.
And the reason for that fear is that there's no guidelines for them to say, here's our security our security awareness policy. So even if you get a request from someone claiming to be the assistant to the CEO, your response needs to be this. There's no training on that. So those people did not know how to reply, and then that quote you read from the report is 100% accurate. What they do then is they just comply with what they feel in their heart is the most helpful thing to do because they really have no guidelines on how they should react to these kinds of requests.
Yeah, I want to be a good person. I want to help. However,
within
I
nature.
Can. Yeah,
within human nature, we all want to do it.
So walk folks through what kind of guidelines they need to have in place to actually make this happen in an effective way. Something that's real. That's not just policy for policy's sake.
I think we kind of outlined two or three different mitigations that need to occur when it comes to social engineering. I mean, of course, we constantly promote our. That's all over the report, our like catchphrase, security through education. So the companies, as well as individuals, needs to become a personal thing, that they begin to educate themselves on security, what's going on out in the world. Doesn't mean that every lay person needs to understand how to perform these attacks, but they need to be aware of at least what's going on in the market so that way they can realize when someone's calling, oh, this might be a social engineering attempt.
Yeah.
And then secondly, we tell them to think about the value of the information they're giving. If someone asks me for this piece of information, what can or can they not do with it? And that really goes along with the third one, which is, does the person deserve the information? A lot of times in these calls, the pretext that the contestants were using did not really fit the request. And we had a guy who was portrayed to be a customer of this one particular company, and he said he couldn't get to this website. And twice he asked the gentleman on the phone, please, can you just go to this website? And the man answered correctly, saying, well, it wouldn't matter if I can go.
Right.
Because we're talking about your problem. But at the end, the contestant said, it would make me feel better if I knew you can get to that website. And the man complied,
yeah.
And he did it. And it was like, really, his first initial response was his reaction was correct. It wouldn't matter if he can get to that or not. So thinking about the deserving, does the person on the other end of the phone deserve this information? Do they really need to have this, and how will this assist them or help them in the job that I have? Those really aren't hard set, like you said, policies for mitigation of social engineering, but they're in a way that help people to think more so through the phone call or through the in-person interaction to realize that what I give out can have very disastrous effects.
Jim, and I didn't see it in the report, but I've seen other reports that focus on the people in the corner office, the bosses. They sometimes can be the biggest a problem children in terms of social engineering because they have access to a lot of information and they sometimes think that they don't have to follow those pesky security rules. Those don't apply to me. I'm the boss.
Yeah, there's a few issues that come into play on that. The last point you made is definitely accurate. A lot of enterprises ongoingly have issues with, we'll say, an executive mindset of entitlement, and that's a challenge, and it's one that needs to be dealt with through communication and going back to the education aspect of this, demonstrating to those executives why exactly is this in their best interest to not engage in this sort of activity. The other sort of aspect of this is what we find in many cases. these sorts of executives, corner offices, and office personnel, they'll be the primary targets of awareness training within a lot of organizations. And there is definitely a degree of effectiveness of that awareness training that's getting through. But from an attacker standpoint, you're going to come after the weakest link within the organization. And what was demonstrated through the Capture the Flag event and documented in the report is the risk that a lot of these call centers then provide. Many organizations, once you get that foothold into the company, it's very easy to then escalate and cascade, have a cascading failure effect across the enterprise. If you can get into one of those call centers, in many situations, that could be the beginning, the first domino to fall, so to speak. And if those call center employees are not subject to the same degree of awareness training as what executives are, they're much higher risk to the overall organization.
Maddie, one of the big recommendations that comes out of this, and again, I'll read from your report, is to have some way of identifying that somebody is actually with the company. Or with your organization, that this person calling from the IT shop is actually from the IT shop.
Correct. One of the people that managed to withstand the call actually used that method. They asked the caller for an ID, a number that's supposed to be on an employee badge, and when that guy wasn't able to give a number, definitely not the right format. That call got ended. And to us, that proved to be a very good countermeasure, at least for that type of information gathering.
Chris, I know your Capture the Flag contest just focused on companies, no government organizations in here, and that was done very specifically. But you were able to get, the contestants were able to get through these things so easily, it's hard to imagine that government not immune to this issue, are they?
Well, you know, there was a report issued, I believe it was in the mid-90s, where the IRS had hired a social engineering group, a security company, to do social engineering. And they used a very simple ploy. The social engineer auditor was to call the IRS agent and tell them that they were doing a massive password change for security reasons, and they needed to enter a new password into their computer. And then that would allow them to log on with this new password for security measures. They found that 70-some percent, I believe it was 72, if I can quote it, but it was 70-some percent of the people they had called had complied with the request. And in essence, if it was a malicious attack, would have put out, I think, 150 million Social Security numbers on the computers that they were on. So it was government is definitely not impervious to these attacks. I think what the CTF report showed us is that this is human nature. So it's not really contingent on the corporation, because we called everything from tech corporations like Microsoft and Apple and Symantec to gas corporations and, you know, petro like BP and Shell to retail companies like Walmart. We called everyone in between. We didn't just focus on IT companies, and it showed that the results showed that they were these personality traits were across the board. So it's not so much about the company as much as it is about human nature, and people themselves are not security conscious.
And Jim, one of my favorite parts of your report is it says information perceived as having no value will not be protected.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. I mean, I felt as if that was an important point of the article. And what that comes down to is when organizations build their security program, they focus on items that are going to keep the company producing whatever product they're putting out, delivering whatever service they're delivering, that sort of thing. When you have an attacker that's targeting an organization, they may or may not be looking at those same assets. They're going to be looking at it from a different aspect, from the viewpoint of what is within this organization that I can take and I can monetize, what has some degree of value to me. And those may or may not be the exact same items as what companies are actually protecting. And that's where penetration testing and other sorts of assessments along those lines really come into value for an organization, because they help identify what are those assets that an outside party will actually be coming after and will actually be attacking. And what we find is some of this information, like, say, version of web browser, version of Adobe Acrobat Reader, that can seem very mundane to somebody that doesn't necessarily understand the what that knowledge empowers an attacker to do. And so no degree of protection is placed into it. And so that's something that has to change in order to really increase the level of defense that an average company has.
Yeah, it's almost a little bit like the magician. Hey, don't pay attention to my right hand, and meanwhile your left hand is picking your pocket or something like that.
Yes, all about misdirection.
Maddie, something as you went through this process, was there some thought, conclusion that you had that is starting out that ended up being proven untrue, or it was more true than you even expected? Something that surprised you as you were doing this?
I guess there was a couple. Well, one of them is very similar to what I mentioned before. The blastering success rate. To me, was amazing, because when we started making this list of companies, I was shaking my head and I said, this will never work. We'll have a mediocre sort of result. And to see such a majority of these companies just cave in, to me was surprising. Even though I am working in this field for so many years, it was still very surprising. Another perhaps less significant, but also interesting, point that was shown was that it looks like the women of all people were better at fending off these attacks. They were a bit more suspicious. They were a bit sharper, and they weren't. Most of the people that shut down contestants at the end of the day ended up being women, which to me was interesting.
As a conversation amongst four guys, that surprises none of us, does it? Because we're all big macho. We don't, we don't have to listen, I guess. Whatever. We can get into that later. We'll have a shrink on or something. Chris, something that surprised you as a result of all this?
I alluded to it before. There was also a couple things for me. The first was the fact that we had such a mix of skilled and non-skilled, or experienced and non-experienced social engineers. And although the skilled social engineers used more complex pretexts, and definitely were able to handle rebuttals better, what we saw was that there really wasn't much difference in the quantity of information that they were able to obtain, being skilled or non-skilled, which to me is a very scary statistic. You know, you don't need to be a social engineering guru or a malicious guy for, you know, your whole life in order to turn this around and get very valuable information from a company. And then secondly, just how willing I think what people were to comply with all sorts of requests. I mean, you know, we would we had probably five contestants, ask them for their browser type, ask them for the exact version of Adobe they use, and then ask them to open up a web page. And many times they would take them to social-engineer.org.
Yeah.
I was thinking in my head, this is going to blow this whole call out of the water.
Right.
They're going to see it, and the top of the page used to say, before we just changed our website, now it says security through education, but it used to say exploiting human vulnerabilities.
Right.
And I figured they'd see that, and they would go, holy mackerel, you know, this is a horrible call, and hang up, or it would just be bad. And we had people say, oh, wow, that's a great logo. What kind of a company are you? You know?
Yeah.
And just completely not, they were at, like, in alpha mode. You know, they were oblivious to what was happening right in front of them on the screen. And that was probably a big surprise for me, because I thought as soon as someone saw the site, that was going to end the call, and it would be a big red flag, and there, you know, the whole company would be alerted at that point, but that never happened.
I'm going to ask all three of you for folks looking to deal with this, or even folks on the front lines who are, you know, you're sitting there at your office and you're afraid of being socially engineered. We scared the hell out of them. So let's try and give them a couple tips that can allow them to assuage so they can sleep tonight. And, Maddie, I'll start with you.
Well, a good friend of mine once told me a sentence which I really liked, and the sentence says, paranoia is perception of reality on a finer scale.
I wouldn't have to be paranoid if everyone would just stop talking about me.
But that's another one, yeah. But I think there's also a fine line about being paranoid and being aware. I think this is also an important concept. You know, service providers, you do want to give service to your customers. You do want to help them. But on the other hand, you need to be aware, not to the level of paranoia where you shut down and, you know, you disregard any need of help from the other side, but you just need to be aware of what you're saying, when you're saying, and who you're saying it to. And again, I guess it comes back to being aware of your own security environment. You know, would you do this at home? Would you just answer someone who called you up and asked you for your credit card number and give them that type of information? So I guess people need to stop working in alpha mode and start thinking about the information that they're handing in, and always realizing that there is a possibility that this is not necessarily what it seems to be in terms of the phone call, the engagement. But yet you have to steer from the fine line of being paranoid and shutting down all requests for help.
Jim?
The thing that comes to mind for me, first off, is organizations need to communicate out to their employees that when they follow the rules, when they follow the guidelines, when they do take the actions that the company lays out in front of them, and there's an adverse result, you know, maybe there's a little bit of pushback to a customer and a customer complains, that the company is going to stand behind the employee. I think too often what happens is there's such a emphasis on customer service, which definitely needs to be there, but at the same time, a lot of employees in a situation where something just doesn't feel right to them, they're so scared about upsetting the customer or potentially causing risk to their job that they will not push back. They will not listen to the hairs raising on the back of their neck, and they'll continue on through, and they'll maybe give something away that they necessarily shouldn't have done. I think that a degree of support from the organization to the employees and making sure that's communicated and consistent is extremely important.
And I think if this is a supposed customer calling, they will actually appreciate that that going that extra step and making sure that assurance says, hold on, this is a organization that cares.
Yeah, it's all about the communication. It needs to be communicated out to the employee and to the customer that this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it.
Chris?
And the why we're doing it's important.
Chris?
Yes, I think for me, one of the things that really affected me, and this is not from the CTF, but in our personal work, when we work with companies, I've heard actual people say things like, well, what do I care? It's not my data. And for me, one of the biggest things we can tell people is that security awareness needs to be a personal thing. It can't be just at work. A lot of times the reason that these people reacted the way they did is this is the way they probably were in everyday life. Our first contestant had a phone call that at the end of the phone call, he knew where the guy lived. He knew what kind of beer he drank. He knew the guy's personal name and how long he was at the company. He knew so much about this individual that, forget about the company itself, so much about the individual that if he was a malicious person, the attack could have been escalated to even a personal level. People need to take security awareness, and they need to make it a very personal thing. And then that personal security awareness program needs to be brought then to the company. People are not really thinking about how all these things that they use in their daily life could affect them on a security end, like social media, all these different types of things that people are into all the time. But then thinking about this on a very personal level, bringing it to the corporation, this can help them to not be so paranoid or scared and be able to effectively counter a lot of these social engineering attacks.